Welcome, everyone, to Midday Magazine for this December 15th, 2023. I have your host, James J. Maloff. In part two, we're looking forward to talking with our friends over at the Wood County Parks and Forestry Department. Chad and Stacy will be joining us. We'll talk about all things winter in this Wood County area. But right now, talking to Senate District 24 Representative, Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Good morning, sir. Good afternoon, I should say.
Hey, James.
Hey. How are you?
James, how are you?
I'm doing good. How have you been?
Well, staying busy. It's been a flurry of activity down in Madison as we close out the fall session and gear up for the new year. And I can't complain.
I want to, it's a perfect place for us to start, sir. I'd like to go right there. December hits, or maybe even it happens around Thanksgiving or so. We all understand the holiday marathon that kicks in right around, Halloween and kind of goes right to the end of the year. No matter what business you're in or what you do for a living, chances are you're busy this time of year. But it seems a little different for you guys. What is the vibe like? Is there a rush to get bills done, to get things in place? Or is it more so kind of like I don't want to say coasting, because I don't think you guys ever coast at your job necessarily. But what is the mood like there in Madison this time of year?
Well, this time of year, it is always chaotic down in Madison. It seems like once we kick off the fall session, it is just a flurry of activity. You've got constant committees who are in work trying to get bills through the committee process and so they can get ready and schedule for the floor when we reconvene in early January. And so that same trend has continued. And so we've been extremely busy down in Madison. In fact, even just about a week and a half ago, the governor signed dozens of different bills. And I was really proud to have five bills signed into law, one of which is a product of, and we've talked about this in the past, that was brought to our attention from the DA and assistant DA down in Adams County, closing a loophole in the statutes that relates to sexual conduct. Really glad we got that one passed. It was not a comfortable one to discuss or talk about, but one I'm glad that we got across the finish line with unanimous support. And again, it was really thanks to the folks, the DAs down in Adams County, who brought this to our attention. And we've closed a significant loophole within our statutes as it relates to sexual contact. Mm-hmm. And again, thankful that we were able to get this one done.
Yeah, that's a really important one. I appreciated not only your work and your colleagues' work on that one, but being able to talk about it and address those things as we did in previous interviews. You mentioned five bills. What were some of the other bills that you were happy to get through?
Another one that was I was really pleased to get done was the Farmland Preservation Tax Credit bill. This was legislation that we have worked on for the past three sessions that, for one reason or another, just sort of died on the vine every time it was introduced. But thankfully, we kind of regrouped and recalibrated, made some tweaks and changes to it. But again, another bill that is going to help our farmers, which is really great because it's not just going to help our farmers, it's good for our natural resources. And given the fact that we've lost nearly a million acres of farmland over the last 10 to 12 years, this is going to go a long way to ensure that we still have viable ag land here in the state. And more importantly, it's going to help farmers incentivize to be good stewards and take care of our natural resources. So it's good for our soil, it's good for our clean water. And more importantly, it helps our ag industry out. And so that was another one that got signed. A third bill that I was really pleased to see get done deals with some of the third-party delivery apps that people have really come to utilize and find popular. But one of the challenges that's occurred is that a lot of restaurants have found their menus and their proprietary information on some of these platforms that they didn't have their consent. And so we worked with the Restaurant Association along with the third-party delivery platforms like Uber Eats and Grubhub to come up with a really good compromise that just puts in place some standards in which they have to get approval and the consent of these restaurants to have that information posted on their website. Because oftentimes when there were issues with deliveries, it may not have been the fault of the restaurant, because they had no idea that their information was even posted on this platform. So putting in place some good consumer protections, making sure that delivery drivers have some basic knowledge of basic sanitary and food safety. And I was really glad that another one that, you know, we introduced last session and sort of stalled and brought it back this time around again with some few tweaks and changes, and it became law.
It's we're only going more into the food delivery services, whether it's getting the foods delivered to ourselves or people working in that industry. Addressing those things is vital going forward. That's an important one to be addressed, and that's good to hear. You had some other bills that you were going to mention there. I don't want to interrupt you.
Yeah, a couple of the other smaller ones were just some not monumental bills, but one dealing with our lake districts, where essentially they can send out notifications via email. Current state statute basically says you have to send out via first class mail a notification when lake districts meet. But again, I think one of the silver linings, if there were any, during COVID and the pandemic was that, look, we live in a modern age. People are able to communicate via email, via Zoom. And so just making a minor update there to for no snail mail. And again, it's not a revolutionary bill by any means, but just trying to modernize some of our things and how some of our governmental bodies can communicate with their constituents within that area. And for lake districts, this was one that they were really hoping to see done, and it became law.
As a side note, it seems in the time talking with you, Congressman Kind, Representative Krug, Katrina Shankland, it often seems sometimes that the, you know, quote unquote, smaller bills make the biggest impacts.
Well, that's just it. I mean, I don't think it's any secret out there that oftentimes technology moves faster than what government can keep up with. And so a lot of times, many of the bills that you see is just trying to keep pace, because oftentimes we are behind the eight ball as it relates to our statutes and trying to modernize some of those. And so this is one of those prime examples where just trying to update things so our laws, our statutes reflect the change in how people communicate and just sort of evolve with the technology of the time.
I want to go back to the Protecting Our Farmland bill, just to go into a little bit into the details of that one. The heart of the bill is an increase to their per acre tax credit for farmers. This is one of those chief concerns that goes back to the 2018 with this. Just a couple of quick stats from this: an increase from $7.50 to $10 per acre for farms that are in the farmland preservation zoning district. There's an increase of $5 to $10 per acre for farms that are subject to a preservation agreement. So a lot of these things seem to be attached to conservation. Is that an effort to not only obviously keep our state healthy, but to also make sure that, hey, we got people coming here that can fish, that can, you know, ski and hunt and all these things?
Oh, absolutely. It's not a one or the other approach. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we've proven that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And one of the reasons why this was so critical is based on survey results that have been sent out by the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection over the last several years. We saw a huge decline in the Farmland Preservation Tax Credit Program. And one of the reasons why we've seen a decline is, one, the tax credits hadn't been increased in many years, nearly 20 years for that matter. And also the time commitment was 15 years, which is a long time for someone to try and utilize these tax credits. And so based on some of the feedback and survey results that came back into DATCAP, really showed that, you know what, this is a really well-intentioned program. Wisconsin's been a leader on this going back to the 1970s. However, as we all know, with inflationary costs, it really wasn't cost efficient for people to continue in this program. And so that's why we increased the tax credits, created a fourth one. And really, this is about making sure that we have healthy soil, that we have clean water, and still being able to help our farmers who have been dealing with a lot of challenges over the last several years. Input costs are through the roof. And so this is just another way to give them another tool in their toolbox to, use best management practices that, again, preserve our clean water, but also still allow our farmers to farm and ensure that Wisconsin is a national leader in the egg economy.
And it does seem like that's another layer to this of helping, not only helping our farmers, but maybe incentivizing farmers staying in the industry, maybe making new farmers. We get people out there starting new farms and that. There's a number of layers to that and encourage people to look into this bill and all these bills and the depth and the details of them. We're speaking with Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston. Sir, as long as we've been talking and doing this, and you've been doing this a long time, I don't believe in the last couple of years I've ever seen more. Almost every article I read or any research I do on a bill in this state, it usually starts with bipartisan support. Do you feel we've seen more of that than ever in the last couple of years of this state becoming much more of a purple state than a red or a blue state?
Well, I think that's been a common trend for the last several sessions, especially you know, in my time down in Madison. This is going on my fifth legislative session, or sixth legislative session, I should say. And, you know, every time that every session, we normally pass about 90 to 95% of the bills with bipartisan support, even more so now in divided government. And I think that's a testament to the fact that we realize, look, we understand that there are going to be some big differences between the Republican-led legislature and, you know, having Tony Evers in the governor's office. And so, you know, we try to navigate that as best that we can and find areas of compromise where we can hopefully advance some good legislation, knowing that maybe there are some other items that we'd really love to get done, but we just know that the governor has a difference of opinion, which is to be expected. But you know, trying to still be able to get things done for our respective districts is at the front of mind for all of my colleagues, and trying to figure out, okay, we can find areas of agreement here, maybe not in other areas, but again, trying to put our best foot forward to advance good public policy. And I often say I think our folks at the federal level could probably take note, and we'd probably be able to get a lot more done, as opposed to focusing on the hyper-partisan fights that seem to dominate our headlines. But mm-hmm. at least down in Madison, for the most part, while we've had some dust-ups, to be sure, and no one's perfect, and no one has a halo above their head, but, you know, that's been a huge focus on us, is try and find the wins where we can and find the agreement, as opposed to just be at loggerheads 24/7, which frustrates everyone, including myself. And so, you know, I think we found a really good place, and as a result, just based on about a week and a half ago, having the governor sign nearly 60 bills, all of which had bipartisan support, I think sends a really good message to the folk, to people out there.
I've said before, and I stand on this, I genuinely believe that Wisconsin can be a beacon, can be an example to the rest of the union of how these things work. We got away from when we started this country, we didn't want one voice. We that was the point. We create these three branches of government, so there's no king, there's no, you know, monarchy or anything like that. We understood early on that this country is going to have many voices and many opinions, and they all matter. They all are important. And I bring this up because I want to get into a bipartisan group of Wisconsin lawmakers this Wednesday received a push to implement ranked choice voting and nonpartisan blanket primaries in the battleground state. Sir, I don't know how much you and I have gotten a chance to talk about ranked choice voting, but I'd like to know, one, how you feel about it, and two, the chances you think of that happening here in this state one way or the other.
Yeah, so this legislation has obviously garnered a lot of attention. There was a very lengthy hearing in the Senate Elections Committee this week. And, you know, I think it's well-intentioned, and I can understand where the authors are coming from. My standpoint is I have grave concerns about it. And, you know, I think our system's pretty clear. You get one vote. And I think the problem with the bill in its current form is that I think it's going to cause a lot of confusion. And, you know, so from my standpoint, I think it's problematic. And so I can't get there on it. I don't understand why we would dramatically change the way we are set up. And again, I get where they're coming from, some of the arguments for it, but I just think it's too much of a dramatic change. It's going to cause too much confusion, and I can't get behind it.
I will say this, and I'm not big on the whole debate thing. You take this side, I take that side, and go. I don't like that. I think that's very boring radio and very boring entertainment. But I do want to say that my big pushback on this is something that you said there about confusing. For one, I think the American people are smart enough to be able to handle this, and I think that they can work this out. I think that also this has been created, and this has become more of a topic mainly because of you, and not you, sir, in general specifically, but politicians in general. We've seen more than ever politicians kind of leaning into their party and almost not knowing a lot of what they represent, but what their party represents, which is great for the party, but not necessarily great for a district. We've already had to do a number of things when it comes to voting that are that push the envelope, if you will. But one thing I think that that needs to be really addressed here, the act of voting should not be difficult. That, you know, once you getting somebody to a ballot box shouldn't be difficult. I think we've gotten away from, though, the idea of you should have to think about your vote. You should have to, there's some thought that should have to go into this. It shouldn't be that easy to just decide, okay, I want this person because they're that party. Like, we've gotten so party-centric that it's become people are treating their party like it's a sports team. Something like this separates that. All of a sudden, you have to stand on your morals, on what you are representing.
Well, and that's certainly one of the arguments that the proponents of this push have been pushing. And so it was interesting. So I was down in Madison when the public hearing was taking place, and I had it on the background of my office watching it. And what was really unique is that they had a former congressman from Maine's 2nd District, and Maine recently implemented a version of this out there. And, you know, one of the arguments that he had against this proposal, and it stems from one of the arguments in favor of this proposal, is that it tones down our politics and the hyper-partisanship. And, you know, from his experience, having lived through it, I mean, he said that in his campaign, first campaign where this was implemented, the nasty campaign ads didn't go away. The partisanship didn't disappear. And that it did cause a lot of confusion for voters out there. And so, you know, I thought it was a really interesting take hearing from someone who's been through this. And then, ironically, on the other side of it, former Congressman Reed Ribble from Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District was there to testify in support. So it was a really interesting dynamic where you had two former congressmen, both of the same party, one who was in favor of this and then one who was opposed to this in a state where they had implemented ranked choice voting. So, you know, it's certainly an interesting concept, no question about it. There is a lot of interest from some very influential folks from around the state, many business leaders who I would probably describe as center right who have been pushing this. But again, based on some of the feedback I've seen from some of my other colleagues, I think it's going to be a really tough sell to see this one get through. And again, I've got my concerns about it. And I guess from my perspective, you know, when I go on campaign, I'm out there knocking on doors every single day during the campaign season and having real conversations with people. And so that way they get to know me personally and, you know, to have that dialogue and have that relationship. And it's the same approach that, you know, we take in the off years where you're out in the community, people get to know who you are personally and understand where you're coming from. And you know, yes, I'm a Republican. I came up in my political time through a county party system, you know, starting at the grassroots level. And you know, I agree with 100% of what, you know, where the Republican Party is at today. Of course not. And I wouldn't expect anyone to. And so, you know, ultimately, when people go to the ballot box, I don't necessarily, and I think this is especially true for Wisconsin, where people don't necessarily automatically look at the letter that's behind their name. They look at the person that they know, that they trust. And that's where I have faith in our system as it stands currently, despite all the partisanship that we see out at D.C., is that at least here in Wisconsin, I represent a district that, you know, has voted that Scott Walker is carried, that Tammy Baldwin is also carried, or, you know, that Donald Trump is carried. But yet, you know, we've elected this district carry Janet Protasiewicz. So, you know, I would say it's a purple district, much like many districts here in the state. And so, you know, I think that to me tells me I have to work hard to go out there and justify why voters should send me back. And that's the approach I've always taken.
I think that we can both agree, though, that this topic, one way or another, is not going away. And if the divisiveness continues and continues to push people to something like this, it's going to be on the ballot box many times. This conversation is not going to stop with that. If we see that increase, although I think we see a pullback from that, and you could see this topic possibly go away. But right now, it doesn't look like it's going anywhere anytime soon. Sir, we only got a couple minutes left. I wanted to touch on a couple of things with you before we wrap up. The Christmas at the Capitol. The Christmas tree got there earlier this month. I'm curious to know, because we don't get a chance to just have fun much. You know, we get into really serious stuff and everything. Last couple of minutes, want to be able to have a little fun with you. Last time we're talking for the year. When it comes to Christmas in Madison, Christmas at the Capitol, what is one of your favorite things about it?
I think, honestly, this time of year, it's so great. And every time the Christmas tree is brought into the rotunda this year, I mean, this tree is massive. I have no idea how they got this in through the doors. I think it's probably one of the biggest trees that we've ever had displayed in the rotunda. And what's so great about it is that it gets decorated with ornaments from elementary students all across the state. And we get to see some of the creativity and just some of the things that they've, some of the decorations that they made. And it's really a great time. And it's not just about the Christmas tree, too. In the rotunda as well, there's a Hanukkah display, and it's just great to recognize all the different holidays that are taking place this time of year. And it really is an opportunity for us to kind of dial back and, you know, take off the partisan caps and really just be thankful for what we have. And, you know, that's the one message I can relay to folks is take some time this holiday season, regardless what holiday you celebrate, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, and really just be thankful for what we have, because we really are fortunate to live in such a tremendous state, what's going on across the globe. Let's just reflect and be thankful for everything that we have and we've been given, and kick off the new year and hopefully put our best foot forward, and we'll see what 2024 brings.
Do you got a favorite thing about this time of year as far as Christmas cookies, Christmas songs, music, anything like that? What's the Teston household like?
Well, even though my wife and I, we've been kind of two ships passing through the night as we've been bouncing back and forth between Madison and her office down in Waukesha. But, you know, we was the last Friday, took some time to decorate the house and watch Christmas movies. So we kind of do a his and hers. You get to pick the movie, I get to pick the movie. It was fun. And so we really enjoy it. And even last night, we had the chance to go to the holiday Ignite party with a bunch of young professionals and just kind of kick back, relax, and again, just be thankful for what we have.
Favorite Christmas song? Do you got one? I'm a big Jingle Bell Rock guy. I love Jingle Bell Rock.
Yeah, Jingle Bell Rock's a great one. I can't say I'm a huge fan of Mannheim Steamroller. I don't know what it is, but ever since I was a little kid, I mean, their entire album, it's one, if it's on, I got my ear tuned to it.
Right on. Sir, we always appreciate talking to you. It's been a great year of conversations with you, as always. If people have follow-up questions, want to know more about some of the things we've talked about, how can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, if anyone needs to get hold of my office, or if you're having any issues with state government or various agencies, or you've got ideas on bills, legislation that's pending currently, or thoughts, reach out to my office at sen.teston@legis.wi.gov. Follow us on social media. Give us a call at 608-266-3123. Stay in touch. And as you know, we kick off the new year, we're going to be out there making the rounds. And so stay tuned and hoping to see folks as we crisscross the 24th Senate District.
Always good talking with you, sir. Happy holidays to you and yours. We'll talk next year.
Same to you, James.
Thank you. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.